Commission.
I'll take one picture because of me.
One picture of you and one picture of a general.
Yeah. Comes out well, maybe I'll use it on my new website also. Yeah. MusterPsych.org.
Oh, yeah?
With a hyphen in the middle.
MusterPsych.org.
MusterPsych?
MusterPsych.
Yeah.
PSYCH. PSYCH.
What's your psychology? This one? Your psych?
Yeah,
it's nice. I have to close my tie and look like a man. It's okay not to. Okay. Elu. I read recently an analogy mashal to the Elu experience. Somebody went shopping and he was keeping to his list and getting everything that he was looking for on his list. And he suddenly sees a huge pile of Cheerios with a banner on top, half price, no limit, with seven kids at home who love Cheerios. He's going to run back, get another cart, fill up the cart with Cheerios. He looks at his watch. He has an appointment in 20 minutes. Doesn't have time to run back to the front of the store, get a cart, fill it up. So the thought crosses his mind. Well, maybe I can just put a few boxes into my cart that I'm using now, even though it was basically full, but probably put a couple of boxes in there. He says, no. I'll come back and I'll fill up, I'll get it all at once. I don't have to get a couple boxes now and then more later. I'll come back later and I'll fill up a whole cart. Of course, the next day, the car doesn't start. The next day, he gets bogged down at work. And by the time he goes back on the third day, the pile is no longer there. He can still get Cheerios, but now he has to pay full price. I thought that was a very useful mashal for what Elul is about. Elul is an Eis Ratzon. It's a time that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us the opportunity to get closer to him and more awareness of our purpose in this world, half price. And so there are those who approach it with a dig the plow in deep and get it all sorted out. Of course, there are those who just give up on the whole task because the task is too large. But the dig the plow in very deep and really get what we need to get out of Elul is the equivalent of planning to come back with an empty cart so that I can fill up on bargain Cheerios. When there's an Eis Ratzon, when there's a time that is a propitious time, a time where the Almighty is closer, more available, more accessible, and our ability to access the relationship is more present, then you just grab whatever you can lay your little hands on. Somebody joked that the only place in America where they talk about God is in Reformed temples and in churches. And then in shuls, they don't talk about God.
And the money?
And the last place they talk about God is in the Beis Medrash. I managed to go through an entire day in the Beis Medrash and not have a word to say about God. I think that's a little bit overstated. But I want to tell you a question that I received and a response that I gave to this question. The question that I received was from a fellow who has a non-Jewish friend. This non-Jewish friend is a very thinking person and has already embarked on a course of conversion. He's in touch with an Orthodox rabbi or a group of rabbis in anticipation of the possibility of conversion. But as a thinking person, he left this Jewish fellow with a terrible question in his mind. This non-Jew said he has an absolute policy. His policy is never ask God for anything twice. He doesn't want to be a nudnik. Doesn't not want to repeat requests. Doesn't want to be a nudnik. You might ask him, why do you have to ask at all? If God has half a brain, he should know what I need without asking. But let's say he's managed to somehow figure out an answer to that. You need to ask. But he will not ask twice. And this fellow writes to me, you know, my friend seems to have a point. And I'm wondering, what am I missing? Why is it that Jews repeat their requests 3 times a day, every day of their lives? Moshe Rabbeinu repeats his requests hundreds of times. He wants to know. It sounds like this fellow has a point. So I wrote back to him in the nicest, most gentle way that I could, and that's not very nice and not very gentle, that God is not Santa Claus. The guy was speaking exactly like a guy. Exactly. God is Santa Claus. Except that he's Santa Claus who hears very well, so you don't have to issue your requests in triplicate. And it got me thinking that perhaps many of us don't have the sort of the savvy or the awareness of what it is that we're trying to do with God. What are we trying to accomplish? What are we trying to do with the Ribbono Shel Olam? So I thought we should spend a couple minutes talking about it, because it seems to me that if we're going to plan in just a couple short weeks to coronate God, we ought to have some sense of what that relationship is. So the first thing that we need to know and we need to establish is that we want to create a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So as far as this fellow's question is concerned, the purpose of davening is for us to affirm our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So let's look at that practically. You walk into davening, you have a toolbox. What's in your toolbox?
A siddur.
Siddur's in your toolbox, that means the content of the tefillah itself. What else is in your toolbox? The room, the presence of the Shechina, Mikdash Ma'at. Okay, there's an Aron Kodesh. There's an environment that is conducive to davening. It's in your toolbox. What else is in your toolbox? the other people around you who are hopefully also coming to the task of tefillah. So you have a toolbox. Let me ask you a question. What needs fixing? You've got a toolbox. Open up your toolbox. But first, what's the problem that needs fixing? Why do I need to daf? Anybody want to venture a guess as to why do I need to daf? Please.
There are many reasons for that. There's a million things going on around the whole world. You need to daf and that the Jewish people stay safe the whole time.
So I'm suggesting to you that our needs are a vehicle, not the reason for our davening. The reason for our davening is because I became disconnected from a reality that I cannot see by virtue of the fact that the reality that I can see is considerably stronger than the reality that I cannot see. And so in the course of the past several hours, I became connected to or aware of my physical reality, the cause and effect physical reality in front of me, and I may have become somewhat disconnected from the reality that I cannot see, which is that it's all about the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's the problem that I have to stop to assess. And no two people need tefillah the same way, because no two people had the same experience over the past several hours. So I first have to make an assessment of what I need to reaffirm a reality that is not evident to my five senses. Then I open up my box, I open up my black bag, and I take out the tools that I need to reaffirm or to strengthen a connection to a reality that I cannot see. Turns out that one of the tools in the bag are my needs. That's one of the ways that I can affirm the reality, because if I'm asking God for my needs, something that's very practical, very down to earth, very grounded, then I've made the connection. I've affirmed the connection. And that's why somebody who just somehow davens because it's a mitzvah to daven misses out on the opportunity to have a connection, to strengthen a connection or a relationship with their Creator. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not a theory. So the reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu is spoken about in those other places, because it, for some of them he's a theory, and for the others he's Santa Claus. So it's no problem talking about a theory. And you, all you do to Santa Claus is submit your requests. Kadosh Baruch Hu only gives us the needs so that we will have what to turn to Him with. It, by the way, is the reason that we all, those needs are also the vehicle that we have for turning to one another. The existence of chesed in the world is made possible by the fact that people have needs. Kadosh Baruch Hu could easily have created us as self-sufficient as the animal kingdom. where every single member of the species could take care of himself until from the day he's born until the day he dies. Doesn't need one another. They can take care of themselves. That would be a dream for an American. And never have to say thank you to anybody. And I never have to look out for somebody else's needs or interests or welfare and try to address their needs or interests. It's a dream. In fact, we say it in the bracha. Borei nefashos rabos v'chesrona. Kodesh Baruch Hu does a fantastic thing. Creates nefashos and their deficiencies. Because it's through the deficiencies that we can do chesed. And it is through our deficiencies that we can turn to the Almighty. So the first step in the process is to notice that part of our black bag, one of the ingredients in our black bag, is our needs. Please.
But are you putting needs and deficiencies together in the same category?
Yes, absolutely.
It's not possible to have a need that's not a deficiency or a deficiency.
The term that is used for a need is a deficiency. I think I'm certainly not using them differentially. So,
we daven in Shema Kolenu that you should al tatzicheinu al basar v'dam.
Okay,
you shouldn't make
good.
Me dependent on basar v'dam.
Good.
And also, midah of a kaddish. If you're trying to live b'selam melekim, midah is self sufficiency.
Okay.
Hashem doesn't need me. So a midah is self sufficiency.
Okay.
So on one side you're thanking him for creating. You say what you want the chesronus in the world, but you don't want it to be on you. You don't want to be the one that's in the position of me.
Well, the rest of that sentence is ki im liyodcha hamaleya hapesucha hakadosha harechava.
Yeah.
I want to be dependent on you. I want to be dependent on you, my Creator. I'm not looking to try to not be dependent on you.
But the fact that it's chesaron that pulls everyone together, that there needs to be chesed.
That's because I want to address your deficiencies. I want to address your needs. I'm asking that I not be dependent on others, but rather only on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But I am looking forward to addressing the needs of the fellow sitting next to me. And it is the existence of those needs that gives me an opportunity to emulate my Creator. I can be more like the Ribono Shel Olam when I'm addressing the needs of another person.
But not when I have those needs myself.
Again, there's an embarrassment associated with receiving. It has to do with an interesting concept that the Tzelem Elokim in each of us is only capable of giving. It is not capable of receiving. Just as a Kadosh Baruch Hu is only capable of giving, is not capable of receiving. So therefore we're embarrassed when we receive. And that's why we have to be very clever when we do things for other people to make it seem as though we're not doing them a favor. To make it seem as though we owe it to them, they have it coming to them. We should make them feel, to the extent that it is possible, that they should not feel in any way that they're coming on to us and needing us.
So the chesrona should be with everyone else and not with me.
My chisaron gives me the opportunity to depend on and have a relationship with my Creator. The next person's chisaron gives me the opportunity to do chesed. So I need both. So, again, the first step in the process is to make sure that we have a sense we are trying to develop a personal relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu as being our reality against a very powerful force in our lives, which is our five senses, which say, can't see God, where's God? I just learned this Rashi, where would God have to do with that? I just bought a soda, what did God have to do with that? I got dressed, I traveled, I came, I went, I did. Where's God in that story? So the first step, the Aleph Beis, the first step is an affirmation called Emunah and Bitachon. That's the first step. So if we were to think of it in terms of the tefillah experience, my question always to myself has to be, what's the nature of the problem? That means I have to do a self-assessment to determine how distant I have become from reality. How disconnected have I become from reality? Once I've made that assessment of how and in what ways I have become distant from reality, what do I do now? I open up my black bag and I take out the tools. Those tools include the people around me who are also trying to reaffirm that reality. I take out the words of the davening, which are designed to reaffirm that reality. I take out my needs, which help me affirm that reality. I take out the room, the context. So I'm not just davening in a dorm room, I'm davening in the presence of an Aron Kodesh, which has its own, it carries its own assist, helps me along. If it's Shabbos, I take that out of the bag as well. And if it's Elul, I take that out of the bag as well. Elul is also one of the tools that are in the bag that help me affirm the fundamental reality of my life, which I need to constantly come back to the affirmation, because my natural tendency, the gravitational pull, is away from that reality. So far, all we've really spoken about is, what am I supposed to do with davening? And I would suggest, I would submit, that the test, the measure of any relationship, is how far away you drift from that relationship when that relationship is not present in front of you. Let me explain what I mean by that. Can I have some nods and shakes? How many of you are basically computer savvy? You know what the difference is between RAM and a hard drive? Okay, no. So RAM, a computer has a certain amount of active memory. Active memory means that there are certain programs that are loaded into the active memory of the computer and do not need anything but a click of a button to flip over from the program that is in the foreground to the program that is in the background. But they're both contained in active memory. Then there are other programs that are shut down, that are not part of active memory, but still sit on the disk, on the hard disk, and when you, usually a little icon on the desktop, when you click on that icon, you can call that program up from the hard drive. There are still other programs that need to be loaded from the box. They're not present on the hard disk at all. Take them out of a sleeve and load them into the computer. They were not present there at all. And let's imagine for a moment husband and wife. Imagine for a moment what happens to the relationship, husband and wife, if as soon as the husband leaves the house, he takes the program out of memory. As a matter of fact, he takes it off the hard drive. But 15 minutes before he goes home, he takes it out of the sleeve, puts it into his computer, and reloads and loads this program onto his computer. Okay, so what would you predict is going to be the nature of the relationship between husband and wife? I think it's going to be a failed relationship. What if he has to click on it as an icon on the desktop? It can be a very strained relationship. The first one will be a failed relationship. The second one will be a strained relationship. The relationship has to be in RAM. That does not mean that he's always thinking about his wife, but it's always part of his active memory. Okay? So it's in RAM. David HaMelech referred to this when he spoke about his relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. He said, Shivisi Hashem lenegdi somid, ki mimini bal emot. Which translates to, I place God before me always, so that I don't trip over my right. I don't stumble over my right. A little hard to understand, right? David didn't write that while he was high, right? What did he mean? The most satisfying explanation that I have heard of the Pasuk is, imagine that door right behind you. Imagine somebody walks into this room and does not leave room for their right arm as they come through the door. So they smack their right arm into the door frame as they walk into the door. The first time that it happens, what do you assume?
Accident.
Had a little too much to drink. And you ask him about it, and he says, well, I wasn't using my right arm at the time. If I was carrying something with my right arm, it wouldn't have happened, but I wasn't carrying anything with my right arm. If it happens two or three more times, what do you assume? There's a neurological problem. Either his visual tracking issue, somehow he's not able to estimate the amount of space that he needs. There's some sort of neurological difficulty going on. There's no way. Why no way? Because your right arm is loaded into RAM. You don't need to consciously be thinking about your right arm. It never leaves consciousness. So you always accommodate your right arm. You don't just walk through a door and not accommodate your right arm. So David HaMelech was able to say about himself that he had placed HaKadosh Baruch Hu before him always, to what degree? That he would not stumble over his right. So what we're looking, every relationship, we're looking at how far away from the relationship do we go when we are not actively engaged in the relationship. The test before davening is, did I assess how distant I had become? Did I use the tools that are at my disposal to move Hashem more into active reality? The test for after davening is, how far away do I go? How far away do I drift from one davening to the next? By the activities that I do that perhaps are incompatible with the reality that I just affirmed through that davening. So a person, for example, who leaves davening and then sits down to learn Hashem's Torah is not going very far away. For him, the shift back to davening is not such a difficult shift. Whereas the person who leaves davening and swims with the sharks and learns how to be a barracuda is swimming very far away from that source. He's going to have to do a lot to make sure to safeguard himself so that he doesn't drift too far away. Otherwise, the reality, he's always going to end up doing the same thing at davening. He's never going to be moving forward. His awareness of and his sense of that reality is never going to improve, because he's always draining whatever advances he makes. He drains completely with the distance that he goes between davening. Now, all of that, Rabosai, will only give you the basic emunah and bitachon. I use the word only. Not, I would never use the word only typically, because it's a tremendous, tremendous accomplishment. I use the word only because in the context of Rosh Hashanah, there's yet another step. And that other step is proclaiming God as King. That's the next step. Not only is He reality, but He is also King. Let me explain what that means. In order for Him to be King, I need to coronate Him. I need to proclaim God as King. In order for me to proclaim Him as King, I need to feel that I am the King over myself. A mouse cannot proclaim the King. Here's what happens on Rosh Hashanah. All the kings of the world line up with their crowns. And they come before the throne of the Almighty, and they place their crown before the throne of the Almighty. And they proclaim the following: I am King over my kingdom. You are King over me. I rule over my kingdom. You rule over me. But a person who does not feel himself to be king over himself, that means he does not have the capacity to use his awareness of God to modify his own feelings, actions, and thoughts, comes before the coronation, and the angel says, "Where is your throne? Where is your crown?" "So I didn't bring one." "So what are you doing here today?" "Today is the coronation." "Well, I came to wish him well. I came to wish him well. I thought it would be nice to stop by and wish him well." That's a nice thing to do. But today is the coronation. You can sign the guest book outside. In here, the only activity that is going on is the coronation of the king. So it turns out that in order to coronate Hashem, I need to feel mastery over myself. Now, total mastery over myself, I'm not likely to feel. Total mastery over myself is something that's achieved over the span of a lifetime. But some aspect of mastery over myself I must feel in order to have something to bring to the coronation. To the extent that I am king over myself, I have what to use to proclaim you as king over me. So it turns out a very strange paradox. The strange paradox is that in order to be humble, you need to be a Baal Gaiva. Look at the paradox. In order to submit that it is all the Almighty, I need to first feel that I am in control. With that control, I can turn to God and say, "It's all because of you." But that if I do not feel any sense of control over my feelings, actions, and thoughts, if I feel myself to be a victim of whatever's happening, and I plead that God should somehow take control over me, it might be a useful prayer, I have no idea. But one thing, it has nothing to do with Rosh Hashanah. And the analogy that you might want to think about is, what if somebody wanted to make matzah out of rice? He was very scared, very scared. God forbid there shouldn't be any chametz in his life on Pesach. So he chose to make his matzah out of rice. There's absolutely no possibility that it can become chametz. He made perfect rice matzahs. what's the din of those rice matzahs? Yes. What's that?
Kidneys.
What's the din of the rice matzahs and Leil Pesach? Can't make a bracha over them, right? Why not? They were the ultimate, ultimate matzah. Why are they not the ultimate matzah? That's right, because it couldn't become chametz. And if it can't become chametz, then it can't be matzah. A person who does not feel himself to be a master over any aspect of his own feelings, actions, and thoughts has nothing to come to the Almighty and coronate him with. And so the process of this Elul Rosh Hashanah process is a two-step process. First, to affirm a reality that eludes us. There's a reality in our lives that tends to elude us. What is that reality? That it's all from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But we must be careful not to disappear in the process. He is the one who gives me ki hu anu sein lecha koach la'asos chayel. He is the one who gives me the energy to be able to master myself. To the extent that I have been able to master my world, He is the one who gives me the energy to be able to achieve that mastery. It's a two-step process. One is affirming His reality against the onslaught of a very physical cause and effect world that we live in. So there's an affirmation of His reality. That's a difficult job, and one that we achieve only in increments over the span of our lifetime, something we have to be working on all the time. And the second is to affirm that to the extent that I am mastering myself, those of you who are writing, to pause and to think, He is the one who gives me the power to write these words. A moment ago, if somebody would ask me, what are you doing? I would have said, I am writing notes. You say, well, where's God in that? Careful. I am writing notes. It's not He's writing notes. I'm writing notes, and I am affirming that it is He who gives me the power to write these notes. Now I have something to come to the coronation with. Now I come to the coronation with that energy that says that I recognize myself as being potent, being capable, and I recognize that capacity to be entirely from You. It's a tricky balance, but Jews are always walking on tight ropes. It's the Jewish way of walking. We walk on a tight rope. It would seem like it's far easier to just negate myself. It would seem that it would be far easier to just negate myself. There's no me, there's just God. I remember hearing once where a judge convicted a criminal to 25 years in prison. And the criminal said, "You can't convict me. You can't even prove that I exist." To which the judge said, "In that case, 25 years shouldn't bother you." We always have to bear in mind the tightrope. It's ourselves, our sense, our personal sense of mastery. I learned this Gemara. I wrote these notes. I explained it to my chavrusa. I asked this question in shir. I thought of this answer. At some point you need to catch yourself and say that word I in the sentence needs to be modified. I, with the help of the Almighty, ask the question. I, with the help of the Almighty, suggested an answer. I, with the help of the Almighty, explained this to my chavrusa.
Is it creating our achievements?
Yeah, I wouldn't go so far as to say we're creating. We are coronating. That means we're affirming his existence through our using our mastery. And in fact, if you look at the language of the prayers, the language of the prayers of the tefillos themselves are a request that his dominion and mastery be proclaimed absolutely. That means that everyone who feels a sense of mastery over himself should come to know that the power that they have comes from you. That's the prayer of Malchus. The prayer is that everyone who feels, who has ever felt any potency in the world, everybody who's ever taken a breath and felt, I can breathe, should recognize that that breath comes from your energy and your power. That's the coronation prayer. So again, I just wanted to make sure that we sort of approach this process with the basic toolbox. When you're sitting down and you want to do avoda to try to improve yourself in anticipation of Rosh Hashanah, stop and think, wait a second. First of all, why am I improving myself? Why do I need to improve myself? Goyim also improved themselves with 7 habits that they learned in kindergarten. They also are improving themselves. What's the difference between my improving myself and their improving themselves? Their improving themselves is a completely self-indulgent activity. The only consciousness that they have in that self-improvement process is themselves. I want to be a better person. I don't want to be a selfish person. Why don't I want to be a selfish person? Because I've decided that being selfish is not a nice thing. To say nothing of the fact that you can't sell widgets if you're a selfish person. So I don't want to be so selfish. And I don't want to be so angry. Because I don't want to lose my marriage. It's an entirely self-indulgent activity. So the first thing I need to do is I need to sit down and I say, wait a second. To what degree do I have a consciousness of the fact that I have a mitzvah to emulate my Creator? As opposed to just the natural flow of a person's life, which is to try to be a Marine. Isn't the Marines in America? Be all you can be, or something like that?
The Army.
The Army? There you go. Be all you can be, or be the best you can be?
It's an army of one.
An army of one, that's even better.
An army of one.
Yeah, army of one.
There I am.
Just me.
So the self-indulgent activity of attempting self-improvement has to be checked with, wait a second, that's part of my 5 senses. I want to work out in the gym because I want to be the guy. I want to have it put together. It's an entirely self-indulgent activity. Okay, but that's natural. That's gravitational pull. I have to pause. Say, wait a second. Why am I trying to improve? In what way does this have anything to do with my Creator? What does this have to do with the fact that I'm a created being of an Almighty who wants me to become closer to Him? So think about that as you make the inventory of all of your rights and your wrongs and your rights and your wrongs and the things that you've got and the flaws and the flaws and the flaws. Watch that. That can become an entirely self-indulgent activity. Where the only person you're actually concerned about, the only one you're actually concerned about, is yourself. It never transcends the self. I just don't want to have those bad characteristics. I don't want to look at myself in the mirror as a guy who's got those faults. So then I have to pause and say, wait a second. It's a problem. problem is I'm very distant from an awareness that the reason why I need to have these things in my mind is because I want to become more godlike. I've got a problem. I'm very distant from that reality. Okay, don't panic. Take out your black bag and open up your black bag. What's in your black bag? The activities of your day, the davening, the brachos. Elul is in your bag. The approach of Rosh Hashanah is in your bag. The yeshiva, the environment, the Torah that you're learning. There are a lot of things in my bag that I could use to help realign myself with that reality. That I'm not just in this thing because I want to be that person, but because I would like to emulate the Creator, because that increases my relationship with Him. Somebody who is very much, has very deep character flaws, cannot deal with the existence of the Almighty. He ends up refashioning God in his own image. You can't deal with a God who's so far away from your own attributes, and if you're not striving to emulate God, it creates it's a disjoint. And you end up recreating God in your own image.
Actions that a person does, for example, a person sits down and he's tired. The person's tired.
If I'm tired, yes.
Yeah, so he chooses and he says, you know what? Right now, I'm going to choose to overcome that tiredness and I'm going to push through after Mensaida and I'm going to make sure I learn this Gemara.
Okay.
And every time he's made a false step, he's choosing.
Yes.
So like to say, I'm doing this with the assistance of the Almighty. No, he's the one who's doing it.
Yes. Yes.
So you can always say that Hashem's giving the energy, but like that's the chira. The chira is you're choosing and you're doing it.
Yes.
You're taking responsibility for actions. It's not like,
yes. Why am I doing that? Why am I choosing to overcome my sleep, my drowsiness, and you know, take down some coffee and go back to Gemara? Why am I doing that? At some level, there needs to be a consciousness of the fact that this is the will of the Almighty, and these are the words of God that I am learning. At some level, obviously, at a certain level, it's just I'm tired, and I owe it to my chavrusa, or I owe it to my schedule. I'm not knocking that. That's very good. I'm pushing for the next level in terms of these days, of this time of consciousness of the Almighty.
Is there any benefit of pinging Bezrat Hashem at the end of every single? At the end of every single decision that you make.
I definitely think that you should think it before you say it. Although there is sort of a Hasidish orientation, there's a Hasidish orientation that says, "Hemanti ki adaber." My emunah is strengthened because I'm constantly speaking about the Ribbono Shel Olam. There's a Chazal with regard to Yosef, that Yosef was constantly mumbling. So Pratifar said to him, "What are you mumbling all the time? You're probably putting a whammy on me. What are you mumbling all the time?" And he told him, the mumbling is constantly asking the Ribbono Shel Olam, may this turn out to be to the satisfaction of Potiphar. May this turn out to be to the satisfaction of Potiphar. So, I don't know if it's a Lithuanian orientation would say think it first before you say it. The Hasidic blood would say it so that you'll start thinking it. But I would recommend that if you're going to say it, don't just leave it as an utterance, because it can become silly. Pause if you're going to say it.
You should be thinking.
To the extent that you can, you are using those events in your life to affirm a reality that you cannot see, and that's always going to be useful.
So you do that. You in your own life, you say, let's say you're successful in a professional sense. You constantly, when you describe to other people, you say, "Hashem enabled me to do this," or "I went on a holiday. Hashem enabled me to go on this holiday." Is that something you do, or you just think it?
I find that I'm more prone to thinking it than I am to saying it. I have sort of a absolute rule against sounding weird.
Why is it weird?
Only because people don't seem to speak that way.
Well, it's because people are not living in the reality of Hashem. They're living in the reality of cause and effect.
You have to be very careful, though, to not to impose your, you know, what you consider to be normal on the world. As wonderful as an idea is, it has its limits in implementation when it would create an abnormality in the world. Nobody's allowed to be to feel tamuha about a Talmud Chacham. Talmud Chacham is never allowed to appear strange. That has to be done very carefully. So that to use that as a guide in a certain population, maybe perhaps in the yeshiva, it would be very appropriate. Not to appear tamua. I have to get back to you on that. I believe that it's the Gemara with regard to Masach and Mekuvi, but I don't want to quote it without seeing it inside. Yes?
Just two more questions. First one being, what's a whammy?
What's that?
A whammy
is what people do when they say the following. If I'll be really good, will you give me a good year? That's trying to twist God's arm and force him to give me a good year. That's called a whammy, putting a whammy on God.
What did you say when Yosef was putting a whammy on Potiphar?
Well, so Potiphar was afraid that Yosef might be putting a whammy on Potiphar, like putting a spell on him.
Okay.
Like casting a spell on him. That's what the Egyptians did. You ever wonder why it is that when Moshe walks into the room and does a miracle, Paro calls out his staff of magicians? Ever wonder what a king is doing with a staff of magicians? You should excuse the pun about the staff. You ever wonder what he's doing with all those magicians? The answer is that in the ancient world, every people had a god. And the more powerful you were, the more gods, meaning the more peoples you needed to deal with. So if he had to go to war against some other African country, who was he really reckoning with? Who was he dealing with?
Their god.
Their god. So what did he need on his staff?
Magicians.
Magicians who would do what? Who would neutralize. It was called Moira, was the ancient Greek word for it. He would neutralize the other god. And then he'd be able to win the war. So you need a whole staff of people to do that. And the reason why it's such a prohibition to go back to Mitzrayim is because of the sorcery. Because what do people do, unfortunately? Translate that into Jewish life, God forbid. What does it look like? I put the whammy on, I put the spell on God. And God says over and over again, please, don't relate to me that way. Don't relate to me as the problem. You know, I was a good boy, Santa Claus. Give me my toys. Don't relate to me that way. Tomim tiyeh m'shem alokech. We're supposed to approach the Almighty without the need to feel that we have to put the whammy on him. I was once in a hospital room. I spent 6 years as a hospital chaplain. I was once in a hospital room, and I asked the patient, who happened to have been a congregant of our the shul, I said, do you want me to take your name? We'll make a prayer for you at Mishaberach back in the shul. And he said, it won't be necessary. The surgeon said that it's fine. So you know what that prayer would have sounded like? Dear God, there's a surgery scheduled for tomorrow. It's a surgery that they've done hundreds of times. It's a perfectly effective surgery. But I know that you can mess up anything. So I'm asking you, please, to stay away tomorrow. You know, like, could you please find something else to do? Like, you know, the Bahamas are wide open. You know, it's a great skiing season. Whatever. Could you please find something else to do so that the surgery will go well? Because I know very well that you can mess up anything. Because you're God. So I am asking you to please stay out of the operating room tomorrow. That's a tragic borrowing from ancient world. That's a Christian approach to God. That's why this fellow, which is where we started this conversation, where this fellow started in with, why do you ever say something twice? Why do you ever make a request twice? That's not nice. That's not respectful. Don't be a nudnik. And the answer is, he missed the whole essence of what we're trying to do as a human being. What we're trying to do as a human being is to affirm our relationship with God. So that we're not walking around with our lives and God being a problem that needs to be neutralized. And so Rosh Hashanah approaches, I need to somehow figure out how to negotiate God to be neutralized. So Kadosh Baruch Hu says in his Torah that he's Asher Lo Yikach Shochad. You know what that means? Asher Lo Yikach Shochad? What does that mean? That he doesn't take bribes. Tell me, what kind of bribe do you think that the Almighty would take?
You're a voter.
So Rashi says one word. What is the one word that Rashi says? Anybody recall? Mitzvos. Asher lo yikach shochad, says Rashi, mitzvos. What's the assumption? That if I somehow do mitzvos, then he'll overlook a few of the slights. You ever hear somebody say that they're a good Jew in their heart? It's one of the reasons why Jews suffer from an inordinate, disproportionate amount of heart disease. Because he's a good Jew in his heart. The assumption being that if you somehow give enough charity, especially if it's to the UJA, you know, then you've somehow neutralized God. But God doesn't want to be neutralized. He wants to be an active part of your relationship. He didn't put you on the world so that you would become distant from Him. He put you on the world so that you would have a relationship and a proximity to Him. You don't have to neutralize Him. He's on your team. He's working with you and working for you. You don't have to neutralize Him. He's doing everything, including giving you your needs, in order to bring you closer, in order to give you a relationship with Him. I think that this, I'd like to just offer this, what we've said, as a little bit of an introduction and a hakdama to all of the work that undoubtedly you're already doing and will continue to do as we approach the Yemei HaDin V'Harachamim. That to be able to pause and to sit in a moment of quiet contemplation and say, what is the problem? How distant or how far have I found myself? And what are my tools? Describe the problem, both in terms of reality, Hashem being part of my reality, my being a master over myself so that I can attribute that mastery to Him. Okay, what's the problem? How deep is the problem? And no two people have the same answer to that question. How serious is the problem? Where does the problem particularly manifest itself? And what tools do I have? What's in my black bag? What tools do I have that I can bring to bear on this process of trying to make the improvement in the relationship? And hopefully you will discover that one of the tools that you have in that bag is the gift called Elul. The gift called Rosh Hashanah, the gift called Aser Simei Tshuva, and the special, special gift called Yom Kippur. Those are gifts in your bag, but if you're just looking at them without having described the problem for which they are the solution, then you're just looking at them and hoping that they work. I hope these things work. I sure hope Rosh Hashanah works. I sure hope Yom Kippur works. What's the problem? What needs to be fixed? And the answer is, each one of us, to the extent that there has been distance, to the extent that there's been a sense of a physical causality and a lack of relationship, it's the perfect solution. The perfect solution for the difficulty that we each encounter through the course of our lives. Yeah, please.
This contemplation that you do,
yes,
when you see how far it is you're away from Hashem, are you looking for bad manifestations of the behavior? What is it then? How do you go about it? How do you go through this contemplation then?
I ask myself, do I feel anything exists other than me? Does anything at all exist in my reality other than me? And the answer will not be a flat yes or a flat no. The answer will be, well, interestingly, I'm starting to notice other human beings. And you know what? On Shabbos, or when I was doing the following, or when I was having a difficult time and I actually davened for somebody who was ill, you know, I actually sensed that there's a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And then I go back and I say, to what degree do I have that reality locked in my sights? Locking it in means going back over the facts, because you're not going to be able to rely on your senses. You have to go back over the facts. He created the world. No, but I'm not sure about that. But I'm not clear. But did he really? We go back and affirm my reality. Created the world. He continues to create the world. I say that clearly. Mechadesh betuvo bechol yom tamid. He continues to create the world. Okay? He gave a law. He revealed himself. He gave, well, I wasn't there. I don't know. Did he really? Wait a second. Look at the Aron Kodesh. This has been there 3,300 years. He gave a law. He has a will for his creations. He didn't just create the world. He also has a will for his creations. Okay? But what does he do now that there's reward, there's punishment, there is a perfect one-to-one correlation between our behaviors and his ultimate justice, both in terms of reward and punishment. But am I sure about... Okay, so now's the time to go back and reaffirm that. Each one of those steps are reaffirmations of a reality that I can't see with my senses. I have to reaffirm it based on going back to the history of Klal Yisrael, based on going back to the Sefer Torah, based on going back to my learning, based on going back to seeing how God's hand works in history. You have to look at a long stretch of history to look at the fact that even the... You know, the fact that there are still Jews around to have Rosh Hashanah. How deeply did I get caught up in sort of a CNN mentality where everything has to have an explanation and the explanation is always temporal? The editorial page of the newspaper says why everything happened. Tell you why everything happened. And there's one why that we need to internalize. Wait a second. There's a why. It's so that I should learn Torah, should do mitzvahs, should have a relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. This is about Klal Yisrael. For that, you need a different, you know, a different eye. Your temporal eye is only going to give you the editorial page of the New York Times or CNN. You're going to need another eye for that. But, and I mean, I burden you now, but I hope that helps give you a little bit of a sense of what to do in that contemplation. You meet yourself and discover how alone you are. And then take steps to address that aloneness. Through the contemplation, through the consideration, through the mitzvahs, through the learning. It says, I'm not in this alone. Yes?
Proportionally, how much of the time a day should one be spending on this contemplation in different contexts, in relationship to how much time is spending on learning, for example?
It's a very, very good question. It's a very good question. I don't have a good answer for you. I would say that there should be enough contemplation so that you're not drifting very far from that contemplation through the course of your day. During the times of Elul, there should be enough contemplation so that when you are away from that contemplation, you are still pretty actively seeking that other reality.
So I see Mr. Swarm seem to talk about this contemplation, but I'm not sure whether I should finish the sefer, then start contemplating. If by learning the sefer I am the mela contemplating already, whether I should stop learning the sefer now I know that contemplation, just contemplate.
Ask yourself the question, is my learning this sefer the way that I'm learning it right now, is it bringing me more awareness of a reality that I cannot see?
So another thing, should somebody more focus on schar or more focus on finish?
The answer is whatever works. Each person has to know. Each person has to know what is working for him and what is not. If it's getting him depressed, so then he has to know that it's not, that he has to modify his strategy. Every person has to know, because the goal is set before us. The goal is increasing and enhancing a reality. So the answer is what works. Does it work? Does it not? Kol tov, Rabosai. Siva v'chasima tova.